You're listening to the DIY Creative Podcast. And if Aben were to shave himself, would he be Senator Smooth Jazz?
First, how about a word from our sponsors? Hey, they make this work. Be right back. DIY Creative Podcast with me, Senator Jez. You can call me Aben. Friends call me Aben. This is episode 40, and we have a treat today. I have my label mate on the show, Skidmatic, Mr. Jeffrey Williams. What you've been listening to right there was his song off of his latest album. That was Zilla. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, my pleasure, man. Good to be here. Good to be here, Senator.
All right, man. So that was Zilla. What album is that off of? You just had an album drop.
Yeah, that's off the When Is When, What Is What album. It just dropped February the 12th. So it's available now on basically all platforms.
That's
Spotify,
pretty cool.
Apple Music, Tidal, Amazon Music. Yeah.
Yeah, because Jay-Z needs more cash.
Let's get it to him.
Tidal. Yeah. That was not a dig at Jay-Z. That was not. It's just I have a hip hop artist on, and I needed to throw some cred out there.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Jay-Z's a good guy too, man. He's a good guy. He's a cool cat. Yeah.
So, Jeff, Zilla, what we were just listening to. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, Zilla. Well, the title Zilla is short for Godzilla because the boom bap drums on that particular beat, you know, they hit hard and they kind of remind me of Godzilla, you know, just stomping through Tokyo or wherever, Japan or wherever, just terrorizing people. So it kind of, you know, gave me that feel. And that's why I named it Zilla. And, you know, I stick with that classical boom bap feel from like the early to mid 80s and stuff like that. So
I'm happy you brought that up because one of the challenges we have on our label is you and I create music that it's hard to put out as a genre on the services because the services we use to distribute our music don't necessarily have the genres we create in.
No doubt.
And I put your stuff out under, I think it's vintage hip hop, vintage hip hop. I think it is. It's something along that line. And
either that or old school.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those two. And it doesn't really matter. What the thing is, though, is that what you create is beats. You create instrumental hip hop. There's actually no words in there, which is some of the confusion. But at least we went with a new distributor recently, which got us closer because now we can at least go vintage or old school hip hop. Before, we were even more limited in what we could put out. How's the response to the new album been so far?
Oh, I'm getting a positive response. Everybody that, you know, been giving me positive feedback. You know, I've had a couple of cats say that they wish it was mixed a little harder or whatever, so it could be a little bit more pristine. But that wasn't really the feel that I was going for. I wanted to have that vintage, gritty feel to it, you know.
You know,
and I guess in the hip hop community they call it that real feel.
Yeah. You know? Well, here's a funny thing. It's like, first off, I've seen it before where top level mixers in any genre. I'm talking like Chris Lord Alge and people along that line. And I'll watch mixing tutorials by them. And they do the exact opposite things, but they get their mixes, right? So mixing is subjective. Everybody mm-hmm. knows when you hear a bad mix, but once you get a mixer past a certain point, it becomes, this is what I like. And other people will always be like, well, that's not what I like. But on that same note, we've been going through the loudness wars for a long time now, where everything was push it to the ultimate decibel, compress the living crap out of it. There's no dynamics. It fatigues the ear.
Yeah.
But dynamics is coming back into music. And there are very few examples of a more dynamic music than the original old school hip hop. Mm-hmm. The highs were highs, the lows were lows, the beat was in front of everything, mm-hmm. but then the vocals would just cut through. And that's kind of where I find that your stuff sits, which is exactly what you just said, which I redundantly repeated.
No doubt.
In a different way. You know, haters are going to be haters. Not that those people hated on you or anything. It's just, you know, mixing. It's one of those things. Everybody knows when you got a bad mix. But once you get to a certain point, it's a subjective mix.
Almost definitely. You know, and if you keep dwelling on mixings and, you know, trying to get the most perfect sound that you can get, you probably, it'll be hard to release. You know what I'm saying? You probably never release that bad boy.
There are so many people.
You know, if you just keep being your own worst enemy, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. There are so many people out there, and I'm not making a generalization here. This is actually a massive thing. They'll go around and they will comment on other people's stuff. Some of them will actually be haters of other people's stuff. They'll tell everybody what's wrong with their stuff, but their perfectionist attitudes to their own stuff means they're not releasing anything themselves. And I'm talking about musicians. I'm not talking about just people on the streets coming by and dropping bombs. I'm talking about musicians that are the best critic of other people or worst critic of other people, but they themselves are keeping themselves from actually releasing because a released song is a million times better than a perfect song.
Most definitely. And that's what I had to tell myself.
Mm-hmm.
So and, I'm like, man, let me just go ahead and get these beats knocked out, mix them down to the best of my ability, because I have been working on my mixes, to be honest. And, you know, one of the things that kind of helped me out was mixing them on mono instead of stereo, then flipping it back and hearing the dynamics and, you know, kind of adjusting from there.
Yeah, that's an insider trick. You build out your song, you have everything, drop it into mono, and if you can make it sound good in mono, when you bring it back out to stereo, everything will sit where it's supposed to sit. However, if you mix only in stereo, you can trick your own ears into believing, especially if your room's not perfect, if you're mixing through headphones, if that's not perfect. So mixing in mono is a good tip. Thanks for bringing that up, because that is a great way to test your mix. And mixing in mono is also important if you ever have an aspiration to have your stuff played in clubs. And I'll tell you why. Because most DJ sets are performed in mono in clubs. They don't have this big stereo field. They have these huge, almost not musical monitors that are meant to promote bass above all else. It's volume over all else. And most mixes get thrown into mono. And if you have a mix that sounds janky in mono, you're not going to put the proper volume. You're not going to put the proper pump into the room, and your stuff's going to sound weak compared to others. So that's another reason to mix in mono, especially if you make a type of music that could be played in a club.
Yeah. And it only took me 15 years to find that out, you know.
But you found out.
But I found out.
That's the key.
So I'm good to go.
You see, my beard is actually gone now. But, you know, a lot of people remember my beard from when I had it. And remembered some of the coloration of my beard. And that coloration in my beard is kind of mimicked in your beard. So if you haven't figured out yet, you're talking to two old timers here. Well, I mean, you're listening to two old timers here.
That's right.
And that's something I'd like to touch on, since you know, typically the people, with the exception of Nate, typically the people I have on this show, I'm way older than them. In this case, you're like less than a year younger than me, I think that's right where we sit.
Yeah, we're basically the same age.
What do you think of this idea that we see floated around that if you don't make it by 30, it's over, just give up?
I mean, when you can put music out independently nowadays, I mean, that's something, that's a thought. You don't even have to worry about stuff like that.
No,
you know, you just do things at your own pace.
And that's really key. I've said it here on the show before. It's kind of a joke, but it's totally serious. It's like, you could be 99 years old. Your brain is a little addled. You know that the door is about to open on the next phase. but you still have aspirations, even if it's just one last solid poop. Something is got you. You're working towards something. And I think you and I have talked about this before. When we were younger than 30, we had that idea that everything's over at 30. Because, you know, at 30, once you hit 30, you're old. And yeah. Now both of us are in the second half of our life. You can do the math, people. I'm 52. We're in that second half of our life now. And if I could go back and talk to my under 30 self, I'd slap myself around and say, look, marathon time. This isn't a sprint. Life isn't over at 30. In some cases, in my case, this part of my life, even though I've been making music since I was 13, this part of my life didn't actually start catching on until I was 44 years old.
Wow. I mean, same here, buddy. I mean, when did we meet?
What we year met was that? In 2012.
2012 is when my music started hitting the masses.
That's when,
you know, you put it on, what, DistroKid and got it out there to the masses, man. And before that, you know, it was just a hobby. You know, just doing it at home. And, you know what I'm saying? It's something therapeutic, which is still therapeutic, you know what I'm saying? But now we're really doing something with our music, man. And it feels good, man.
Yeah, it's I had all but given up on music. I mean, you know, I played in punk bands when I was a kid, and then I just farted around. And then I got signed onto a pod show back in 2005 and started my podcasting career. Yeah. And that ran through 2010. I had 485 episodes. And when I got dropped from that contract, I didn't want to podcast anymore for a while. That's to be sure. You know, that had, you know, had to get that taste out, you know, had to swish around with the Listerine for a little bit. But it hit me. I have all this recording equipment now. And that was right about the time when people were starting to produce in home studios. And of course, the software had come up to the point at that time where you could produce professional results in your home.
Oh, yeah.
And it took me a while. It took me a while before I got up the nerve to release anything. And I had a big learning curve ahead of me. But all of that happened. Like I said, I didn't put out my first piece of music until I was 44 years old as an official release. When I was a kid playing in punk bands, you could DIY stuff, but there was no releasing music back then, you know, without money or backing. And it's been a really fun trip with you since we got Reaching for Lucidity going now as a record label. Before it was my podcast. Now it's our record label.
Oh yeah, man. And you know, we're going to keep it rolling. We're going to keep it moving, man. I mean, I got more, you know, projects that I'm working on. I got another EP, LP that I'm working on right now. I mean, I just released the When Is When, What Is What. And I immediately started working on something else, you know, just to keep the ball rolling, keep myself busy and, you know, just to keep having fun, man, with RFL, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Please tell me you're titling the next album. So this is When Is When, What Is What. The next one is Now, Sucka.
Nah, to tell you the truth, man, I think the next title, I'm thinking of naming it Genuine Intentions. I don't know how I'm going to build around that with the music yet, but.
Well, you have to make everything as derivative as possible.
Yeah,
you have to rip everybody off on Genuine Intentions. Who can I steal from for this song on my Genuine Intentions album?
Yeah, man, don't get at me for uncleared samples, please.
Hey, no uncleared samples at Reaching for Lucidity.
Yeah, we just go with it.
No. You heard that, Internet Police? I think, you know, it was just a couple of years ago where Sony tried to steal my own song that actually had no samples in it at all. It was something that I wrote, orchestrated, recorded all myself, and Sony Music Group, or whatever they call it, SMG, came after it and saying that I had infringed on their copyrights. And I'm like, I fought that one. I had a couple of videos taken down recently just because I used a service and I didn't feel like fighting over the video content. It wasn't musical content. It was parts of the video got claimed, even though it was royalty free on the service I was using. I was like, whatever, I'll just redo the damn videos. But yeah, man, they come. It's almost like the old music industry now doesn't know how to make music and doesn't really know how to promote their artists anymore. So it's like they just go out and try to steal independent stuff all the time. Like, I'm going to take all that sucker's 5 cents.
Wow. You know,
not even a dollar. It's 5 cents. I'm going to take all of that 0.00048 of a cent from Spotify off this motherfucker.
Yeah, man, that's how they doing this, man. The giants are trying to take from the little guy, man. It is crazy.
They're scared. They're scared because the independent music scene has really come up. It's not a zero sum game, you know.
Yeah, and we don't need them no more.
It's kind of funny, like David Crosby from Crosby, Stills and Nash and Buffalo Spread. You know, the old guys. Let's just put it old guys. It doesn't even have to be David Crosby, but it's funny because he's like the forefront of this, talking about anybody can put music out now. There's too much music. There's this blah, 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 blah. What they're basically saying is it's not done like when we were kids. So screw everything. Those people with the major label mindset, they're angry, they're confused, and they're scared. And the truth is there's no need to be angry. There's no need to be confused, and there's no need to be scared because everybody can put the music out. And those that were on a label or still on a label or anything like that, have a name recognition that people like you and I don't have. They have a leg up in the race.
Oh, yeah.
I always had a saying that the best way to complain is to create something.
And that's what we do, man. We just keep creating, keeping the ball rolling. I don't worry about, you know, anything from these big labels or whatever, as long as we got our little thing going with RFL, man. We put music out whenever and whenever we decide to.
That's right. You know,
and you know,
we're not beholden to anybody either. We don't have to watch our P's and our Q's. We can do anything. Yeah. And that's a beauty of the independent scene these days as well. And you reap what you sow.
And that kind of peace of mind putting music out is golden to me. I really don't need anything else.
So tell me, what got you into music and what got you into creating music?
Oh, what got me into music? Well, growing up, my dad, he had this serious record collection. And, you know, I used to spin records all day and just sit around wondering how did they put these sounds together to make the music, you know. And I always wanted to, you know, to be able to afford music equipment. But, you know, in the early 80s and, you know, late 90s, you had to buy all these big pieces of hardware that cost you $2,000, $3,000 a pop. I just didn't have it like that, you know. And man, once they came out with Fruity Loops on the computer, I was like, oh man, it's over. And you know, from there, man, I was working with Fruity Loops for a while, and then it crashed on my desktop. And
kids, for those of you that are younger than us, Fruity Loops is FL Studio now, because you're young. back to you, Jeff.
Yeah, and from there, you know, I went to Propel Ahead Reasons. And I was having fun with that. And I kind of stopped using that because I came to a point where I either had to upgrade my computer to get the latest version or just switch to something else, you know? So what I did was, you know, I switched to Logic, which this is where I'm at now. And
Logical.
Yes, it's just way better than anything that I've ever even worked with, man.
I thought that was funny when we first started working together. You were using Reason, and it's like, wow, man, you chose the thing with the biggest learning curve ever to use. I got all this software out there that's a lot easier to use, man, but you chose Reason, dude. It's like, it's like basically punching yourself in the dick with, you know, to make music.
I mean, yeah, you really got to grab it by the balls, man, to make it do what it wants you to do. You know what I'm saying?
That's nothing against reason. A lot of people make a lot of great music with reason, but man, it makes you jump through a lot of hoops that a lot of other programs don't make you jump through.
I'm telling you, man, I don't even think I'll go back to it. I think they make a version now that you can use with inside your DAW, working with other programs. Like I could use it working with Logic.
Right.
You used to couldn't do that now.
Yeah. It's they've actually made themselves way more user friendly from what I understand now than it used to be back in the day. But but things are fluid. Things are fluid. Myself, I started, it's funny. This is actually funny to me. It won't be funny to anybody else, but it's funny to me. But back in the day when I was a pirate and I was pirating my software, which by the way, you never make anything real until you stop pirating and put your money down. I started out on Cakewalk. Actually, no, Sony Acid. And I wasn't making any music. I was just doing loops. That was the first real looping software, you know, like where Ableton and all owns now. That used to be Sony Acid. And then I went to Cakewalk, and that was the first time that I was using a digital audio workstation. Acid was, but Cakewalk was the first real. And then I tried this, tried that, tried this. And then I got with Ableton. And that's where I made most of my music up until about a year and a half ago. And I started doing iPad production, and I'm on Ableton 9, and now we're on, as of yesterday, Ableton 11 was released. I didn't upgrade to 10. I didn't upgrade to 11. The prices were steep. I went to Reaper, which is a $60 license, and I was doing really good on Reaper. And then I realized, you know what? Let me try Cakewalk again, because it's free now. It's absolutely free. The entire program is absolutely free. It's Windows only, but through BandLab, who bought Cakewalk, they just released the program. It's completely free. Wow. And I went to Cakewalk about 4 weeks ago, and I'm loving it. So it's like, holy crap, I'm right back where I started, you know? And I have Ableton, which I think back in the day I put down like $900 for to get the full suite. And then I got Reaper, which I love.
Yeah.
And it's a $60 license. And I have that in my back pocket and have a bunch of DAWs on my iPad. But I ended up going with the free Bandcamp, which is now free. It wasn't free back in the day. And I'm loving it. Now my iPad is still a big part of my production, but I use it for all the instruments because I want to go back to what you said earlier. When we were kids, I played punk because I could afford a cheap guitar. I loved electronic music back in the day, but I couldn't afford the Emu Emulator 2 and the Yamaha DX7 and the Synclavier, each one of those running between $3,000 and $15,000. And I have a million times more capability synth and sampler wise on my iPad that the average program run. I mean, well, not average. They run between free and about $20 a program.
Yeah. I mean, it's just opened up all the doors in the world for cats like me and you, man.
Yeah. And I still do things old school though. There are some things in the digital audio workstation that I do MIDI. Drums being one, I'm not the most rhythmically inclined person, not very good at keeping time. I can play over drums really well, but I need at least the bass and the snare to be programmed because I'm not really good with keeping time. But beyond that, I usually use the instruments in my iPad as audio into my digital audio workstations because I come from that play your music background, which is not anything. I'm not saying anything against people that program their music or they use the piano roll or use sequencers. That's wonderful. I love it all. Yeah. Myself, though, I like to actually record my stuff, even my synths, in as audio. Because I like that old, again, we're old, that old school feel of tape, you know, or whatever you'd like to say it. I mean, you can still edit like mothers inside of digital audio workstations, but I like to put it down as audio. And if I mangle it up really bad, I have to do it over again.
And it gives it that humanistic feel too, you know. A lot of your projects, man. I'm telling you, it seems like it feels like it's an orchestra in the room, you know, because it has that real feel to it, like that, you know, non-quantized. You know, it's just awesome.
You see, that's how we grew up.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as perfection back in the day.
Yeah.
First off, you had to pay so much money to even get into a studio. That's why people were on labels. It's not because they wanted a label. They needed the label to pay for their studio time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't get paid until you paid back the label for all the money they put into the recording and paying the producer and all that stuff, the engineers.
No doubt.
So then once you got into the studio, well, then time now is a thing. You're being charged while you're in the studio. And tape, astronomical. Tape was expensive, man.
Yeah.
And you couldn't edit tape like a digital audio workstation. So you got a lot of personality on the recordings. Of course, you recorded it as near perfect as possible. You recorded your best performance, but your best performance was still human, and it still wasn't mm-hmm. perfect. And I, to this day, still can hear that in music. That
yeah.
it's not quantized, and it is even possible to quantize drums and audio in the digital audio workstations today, and a lot of people do that. I prefer yeah. the things to be a little more human.
Yeah, just a tad off, so it'd feel, you know, a little bit more human. I mean, that's the thing about trap music. I love trap music. I'm not taking jabs at it, but sometimes, man, it could just be a little bit too electronic and in line. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, you can't play a hi-hat that fast. I know I can't.
Hey, you know, listening to the masters back in the day, a lot of what early hip-hop sampled wasn't rock and roll and R&B. They sampled jazz when it came to the
yeah.
percussion and the drums. And that's because jazz had a groove.
Mm-hmm.
And that groove wasn't necessarily perfect.
They call it
the vibe.
It had a pocket.
They had a pocket.
And, you know what I
mean? And that's where a lot of early sampling came from in the hip-hop community. Now, the hip-hop community also brought us to the point now where samples have to be cleared because they were mm-hmm. ripping everybody off and they didn't care. They were just putting it out. They weren't paying anybody for their music back in the day. And, you know, it
Amen.
Doesn't get much more gorilla than that. And I love that, man. It's like, go out and be a punk, man. You're not going to follow the rules. You're going to be that sniper up in the tree sniping people gorilla style. You know what I mean?
Some rapper said, rappers of art, you can't own no loops. It's how you hook them up in the rhyme style, troop.
And man, they got away with it for a little while, but when people finally caught on, man, there were some big lawsuits. But to this day, if there was one thing I could tell you as an independent artist, people, I'm putting on my authoritative voice here. Clear your samples. But better yet, since it's so expensive and so hard to clear samples, go to royalty-free sites and get royalty-free samples, or learn to make your own.
Like I did. I went to Splice.
There you go.
Know, pay my little monthly.
Not sponsored, but we're both on Splice, you know?
Yeah.
We use Splice a little bit differently, though. I go to Splice for rhythms and to get sounds that I can put into my sampler and create new instruments. You use Splice much more in the old hip-hop way of using, and I really like the results you got on the latest album. I do.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. I'm trying to keep it moving in that same direction, man.
Can you hear our co-host?
Is that Spark?
No, that's a Pixie.
Oh.
Yeah. Sharp is pretty quiet until Pixie gets him to a certain point, and then he chimes in, and then you really hear it. Because when he barks, the house shakes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I wish you'd calm down, because she's probably this close to triggering him to joining in the chorus. You know, we'd have to pause for a second if Sharp was involved.
No doubt.
The joy of dogs and home studios. You know, what
no
you going to do?
Brother.
So let's get down to the nitty gritty, Jeffrey. Skidmatic.
Yes, sir.
Is there any advice you would give an up-and-comer or somebody that is just stuck in the bedroom and through whatever reason, fear or perfectionism, doesn't want to get out the bedroom? So is there any advice that you've gleaned over the past year, few years of picking up your music career that you can pass on?
Well, my advice would be, hey, don't be afraid to put your music out. I mean, with each release, you're going to get better. So you can just hear your elevation as you go. Don't even worry about what people say. Just try to do the best you can as far as putting the best product out there that you can put out. And that may entail doing your own little research as far as if you can't afford to go to a, you know, music school, do your own little internet searches on mixes and try to read up on stuff like that. Playing things in harmony, learning certain keys on the piano if you don't really know how to play the piano. That, at least that way you can learn to put melodies together and keep them in a harmonious state. You know, but you know, at the end of the day, just, you know, follow your dreams, keep working hard. I mean, hey, put it out there and don't be scared.
I like that. Don't be scared. Put it out there. I also like that you touched on music theory a little bit, because music theory scares a lot of people. But here's the thing. You don't have to know music theory inside and out, but knowing your scales, knowing your degrees of your scales, which is telling you what chords work within scales, that's actually very simple to learn. And just knowing that opens up all kind of possibilities, because, you know, you develop an ear. Like, you know, if you're playing something in a certain key and you hit a note outside that key, you can hear it.
Yeah.
But then once you learn something as simple as just the scales, several scales, major, minor, Ionian, Aeolian, Mixolydian, you know, just learn a few scales, and then you learn how the chords work in the scales. Then you can actually hear something outside the scale and then make it work. Because Jimmy Page once famously said, if you play something once, it's a mistake. If you play it twice, it's real.
Yeah, it's real.
You know, that whole thing, you know, you hit that bum note and people are like, whoa, hit that bum note again. Just lay on that bum note for a little while. It kind of goes with the thing where people say, you know, learn the rules before you can break them. But many people think that learning music theory means that you learn to write music and you learn to score music and you learn to orchestrate music and you can work with a symphony and you can. It's not really. Yeah, you don't. Learning a little bit of theory is important. If you want to take it to learning a lot of theory, that's really cool. But
no doubt,
just learning the basics of your scales and things like that can take you a long way, because you'll instantly hear a more professional sound to your mixing.
Doubt, man.
And that's actually solid advice, man. What about advice about getting old?
Hey, man. This way, it's coming. If you live long enough, it's coming. You get all of this.
I wanted to hit on that, because one of the things that I find is so funny is the youth talk about the old people, us, as if it's a derogatory thing to be old. But I'm like, your best chance for your future is to be old like us, because the alternative is you die.
Yeah.
You know, why do you go at people for being old? You're gonna be old. Unless you don't make it, you should go to bed every night and say, man, I hope I get old.
Yeah, because getting old is a blessing, man.
Wouldn't it be great if I got old?
Yeah.
Old is so freaking cool, man, because I'm not dead. You know, I still got time. Look, man, look at our age right now. And with modern medicine.
Give me 100 years, man. Yeah, you know, I'll live to be 100, man.
With modern medicine now, everything. We got shit in front of us.
Yeah. Some people don't even want to be 100 years old, bro. They'd be like, nah, man, I don't want to walk around, you know what I'm saying, you know, pooping on myself and people having to hold me up. Nah, man.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but some people do that when they're young on purpose. Okay, enough for that. You know where that goes.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. One thing is, there's a part of me that wishes I had learned what I know now, if it had gotten through to me when I was younger, although I couldn't have used it when I was younger, because when I was younger, we didn't have digital audio workstations. We couldn't make releasable stuff in our bedrooms and then release it and have it available to the whole world. That just wasn't available. But I wish I would have known then what I know now. But then again, there is something so cool about hitting my stride in my later years, because I don't have to worry about the excess. I don't have to worry about things going to my head. I can take things more level-headed. And if something doesn't work today, I don't have to stomp around like I just ruined my entire life because this didn't go well. I know there's a tomorrow, because I have so many tomorrows behind me already. So there's something about these later years that's such a comfort. you're not as anxious. You're not as, this has to happen now or else it's never going to happen. No, when you get to our age, you realize that it really is a marathon, not a sprint. No, so it's that looking back is kind of cool.
See, the thing for me, man, like I said, making music is therapeutic. So I'm going to do it anyway. It's just, I'm just fortunate enough to have a, you know, a avenue that, you know what I'm saying, where I can release it.
Right.
You know, and let people hear it, man. But, you know, me doing music at this age in my life is something that, you know, I enjoy. You know how old men sit around and play checkers and chess? That's what I like to do. I like to sit around and, you know, rearrange my sounds and, you know, put my beats together and stuff like that. Hopefully, you know what I'm saying, by continuing to do this, I can avoid Alzheimer's.
Well, you know, we have such an advantage over generations before us when they hit this age. The internet was a game changer. Kids look at us like we're dinosaurs, like we don't know how the internet works. We built the internet. We were there before the internet. We were there when there were rotary phones. We're here now. We were here for the whole time. But when our parents were our age, and before that, they went to work, and then they got home. There was a TV or a radio or a record player. As in the case with your dad, he had records. Mm-hmm. And there was a newspaper, or you could have books. But there was not enough time in the day or the resources in the day for them to go and pay their bills and then get home and try to build a career in something like music. Like could do hobbies. They could do, or maybe they could come home and do woodworking and try to sell their woodworking on the weekends. So there was always that side gig thing.
Yes.
But side gigs weren't as available as they are to us now, one thing. And the internet has meant that we don't have to give up our dreams. So whereas our parents got to a point and they're like, now we're an adult, now we have a family, this is my life. So they work to retirement, they give their entire life to a company or companies looking for that gold watch. And by the end of it, they're spent.
Yeah.
We don't deal with that anymore. So,
no.
You know, we pay our bills and then we do our work and it's fun. Yeah. And it's enjoyable and it's all accessible and we're not wearing ourselves out. And by following our dreams now and having the ability, thanks to the internet and thanks to technology, we're not looking for our gold watch. We're living life as we go. We're not at the end where we're not spent. We haven't just given it all to somebody else for a paycheck. We haven't had to grow up. Yeah. We had to adult. You have to learn how to adult. But we don't have to grow up anymore. And that is a game changer. So I think that that's a big difference between us and generations past. What people think about us now at this age actually kind of was true in generations past.
Yeah.
But it's no longer true. We can go and act a fool as long as we want. Now, the internet gives us that, you know. And by act a fool, you can choose to be that guy that goes on the internet and I don't know. Things that people do on the internet, you know, not all of it's healthy. Or you can do things like we do and a lot of others like us do. Make things, create things, disseminate it over the internet, share it with others, get a side gig going, make the gig your main gig. Let's talk about that for a little while. I'm kind of monopolized. I'm kind of going off on a rant here. But let's talk about success, because one of the things I talk about a lot here, and I'd like to hear your views on it, is with the way the internet is and the way technology is and all, we get at the independent scene, we get to choose what success is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer, hey, my friend's mom hasn't heard you on the radio, you're not worth a crap. It's, you can do anything within this realm of creativity, no matter if it's music, art, anything. I mean, so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, success to me, you know, is basically, you know, just having my albums out on all platforms. I mean, when I was 20, I didn't think that would ever happen. You know, if it's out on all platforms, somebody is going to purchase it. I mean, if I reach one or two ears, I'm good to go, brother. You know what I'm saying? That's success to me. You know, success is also having the equipment to make this music and put it out, you know, having partners like you, you know what I'm saying, that support me as I put this music out. I mean, success, it was really close, you know what I'm saying, as soon as we started.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna no names are gonna be named here, but I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit. Because not too terribly long ago, you were contacted by somebody who used to be traditionally successful. And now we've learned through their business dealings and their contact with you that they were one of those that fell into the trap of the record label. And once they weren't there, once that support wasn't there anymore, it turns out they weren't really all that successful. They didn't really have the money. They didn't really have the fame. They approached you and they were trying to pull a switcheroo on you to get you to play the label game. Yeah. And basically give up all the rights to your stuff and all to do what they did back in the day. And it's kind of funny because mm-hmm. this person that approached you had a partner who maintained success in the industry because they played the game right, whereas he did the label thing, and when it was all over, he hadn't set himself up. I guess I kind of told the story, but I'd like to hear it from your point of view.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to dig too deep into that. I mean, but basically, that's how it went. I mean, the guy got in contact with me once, twice, and after that, I never heard from him again. So,
do you remember when we were kids, man? I say kids, we were probably in our early 20s. And I think it was one or all of the members of TLC, or it could have been, name's escaping me. A very popular artist filed for bankruptcy. And I was thinking to myself, million selling albums, always have the Rolls Royces in their videos, always looking like they have all this success. Mm. Don't get me wrong. Taylor Swift exists. Justin Bieber exists. Jay-Z exists. John Mayer exists. There are people that have made massive amounts of money and success in the music industry. But what a lot of people don't realize is the majority of people, not only today, but back when we were young, all of that, all those cars, all that wealth, everything was dependent on the label, not the artist. A lot of these people signed deals that were not very good. I've already said that everything a label paid back in the day to have an album made had to be paid back before the artist started getting paid. So they'd give the artist this amount of money up front, and they had to use that money for the recording and everything. But that had to be paid back before they ever started seeing any money. The labels, it was in their best interest, still is, to have people believe that they're living these glamorous lifestyles and things. But the fact is, if they were dropped tomorrow, that stream would be cut off.
Cut off.
There are major stars out there, but more people are actually in danger of losing it all. They don't have that big of a career. They don't have the big houses, or if they do, it's not due to their finances. And so that shook me back in the day.
I heard that kind of thing happened in a little Bow Wow.
Oh yeah, Bow Wow got called out recently. I mean, he was, this was in the past year. He took a picture of a private jet on a tarmac. And then somebody that same day took a picture of him sleeping in economy. He took a picture of the jet and jumped on economy.
Wow.
Which, by the way, is no big deal. No big deal.
But why front like that? Why would you have to front?
The days of faking it before you make it are kind of over, because everything can be checked on the internet. And everybody's looking to check you. Everybody's looking to check you. If you're out there making these bold claims, look at my private jet. And you start to think in the back of your mind. The last thing memorable I remember him doing was Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. It wasn't even music. Maybe he has made music since then, but it hasn't become big enough to fall on for me to pick up on it. I don't follow a lot of popular music anyway.
I can't remember anything in the last few years, but yeah, I'm an old cat. I mean,
it's like I stopped listening to mainstream stuff a long time ago, and I'm not the guy that's going to say that's because it all sucks. Because people that listen to this show, I say it enough. There's no such thing as bad music. There's only stuff you don't like, and it's not necessarily that I don't like it. There's a reason pop music is pop music. It's because it's made for you to like it.
Yeah, it's called popular music.
Exactly. I just prefer to listen to stuff that I like when I was younger. new stuff by the people that I liked when I was younger and stuff now that sounds like stuff when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I like to listen to experimental stuff and independent stuff, you know, just the, you outgrow the radio at some point.
You just outgrew it, man.
You know, I guess if you have kids, you never outgrow it because you're always going to have it in your head. Right. I'm old and I don't have any kids in the house. So there's no reason for me to ever put it on what is it 105 or here in town or whatever the station is, you know whatever.
When you got your whole library back there behind you, come on.
Yeah, you know, I've got stuff that I listen to. I got my streaming services, I got my records, it's kind of funny because Faith got me that tape player for Christmas, and I just went and found some tapes at the thrift store. I'm like, I played them, about half of them still played, the other one's like what people are listening to this show is, you think I'm complaining that the tape sounds like that? No, that's gold for me. That's going to be a new song for Souls Leak Liquid Silver. I'm going to sample the hell out of that and turn it into a song.
You're supposed to, man.
I prefer the stuff that sounds like somebody put it in an aquarium for 5 years and is playing it underwater.
You can definitely make some use out of that. Mangle it up, turn it into something else.
Yeah.
Incorporate it. Come on, man.
That song, Too Shy from Kaja Gugu, sounds amazing at an unnatural, wavering, slow pace.
Wow.
You know? It's like, I can do something with this.
No doubt.
Is cool stuff. You always have to be listening, people. If you're a musician, you always have to be listening. If you're an artist, you always have to be looking. You always have to be doing whatever it is.
Yeah, you always got to keep that ear tuned in. Like, yo, I could take that, reverse it.
Well, that gets us back to mixing. It's like people like, this is how you mix music. People that came at you for your mixes. You mix yourself very analog style. That's the term I was thinking, trying to get my brain, is you mixed it digitally, but you mixed it very analog sounding. Like maybe it did go to tape instead of digital. You know, you have that old school sound to it. But you look at shoegaze as a genre, or lo-fi pop, like Ariel Pink, who recently got canceled because of his participation in a certain rally in Washington, D.C. But before he got canceled, I'm not even going to get into cancel culture, but he started making music in his bedroom on cassettes, playing a bass with two strings. And he played this very, very lo-fi. I mentioned sounding like maybe it was recorded in an aquarium, this overwhelming reverb, drippy reverb on it and stuff. And he actually made a whole career out of that, because when you're doing the same thing everybody else is doing, they're already doing it. There are already fans listening to that because somebody else has done it. Somebody else is probably more popular than you. Not saying you can't make it in that field, but the key isn't to necessarily go and get 50 million fans. The key is to make something new, find the people that are looking for something new and like what you did, and then make a career out of that. And that's sort of the way I look at things now. You know, and mixing, that falls right into it. Your mix is what your mix was. It was a good mix. It wasn't a bad mix. Everybody can tell a bad mix.
Yeah.
But once you get to a good mix, then everything becomes subjective.
Oh, I was happy with it. At the end of the day, I was like, this is better than what I've done in the past. I mean, period. So at the end results, I was totally cool with it. So regardless of what anybody said, I was like, hey, thanks for listening, man.
Have you noticed that these days people give up or consider themselves a failure or go at other people because learning is not frowned upon? It's almost as if you don't get it right out the gate, then you suck.
Yeah.
But that's not the truth. The truth is my mixes today sound imminently better than back when I first started releasing. Mm-hmm. And that's a natural progression. That happens. Yeah. But today people are so hard on themselves and by default are hard on others. Like you said yourself, this mix is way better than mixes that you did when you first started because you've learned so much along the way. Mm-hmm. Life is a journey. It kind of makes me sad when I see, and this isn't young people, this is people our age the same way, you know, oh, I can't do that. I tried that. they tried it. It's like, oh, I opened up a computer and I tried to do this and I didn't do it right, so I quit.
Yeah.
Dude, if that would have been the case with me.
Yeah.
I mean, with any of us, I started playing punk music back when I was a kid, which meant I couldn't play my instrument to save my life. So did I quit? No, you just keep going. And there's always somebody better than you, so you can never judge yourself by anybody. Oh, there's always somebody better than you. So when you look at it like that, you're always learning, you're putting your stuff out, and you realize there's always going to be somebody better than you, and that's okay. That's how you build an independent career, by keeping those three things in context. Put your stuff out. Oh, I just flipped you off. Hey, Jeff. I should have started with that finger, but no, I started with that finger. Always put your stuff out. Don't compare yourself to others. And understand that tomorrow you're going to be better than today because you did something today that you learned from for tomorrow.
See, man, I just try to put out the best product that I can put out. And I don't try to compete with anybody. I don't try to compare myself with anybody. I'm just comfortable knowing that, you know, Jeff, you're skid. You did the best that you could do in this mix. You laid those beat patterns, you know what I'm saying, as dope as you could get them. Put it out to the quit overthinking crap. You know, I just roll like that now.
Overthinking things will take you down, man. It will.
Yeah. And I'm done with that. You know what I'm saying? I'm done with, you know, should I put this? I'm gonna wait. Now I'm gonna replace this beat with that. No, I'm putting it all out. Everything's going. Everything's going, brother.
That's it. Well, hey, man, this has been a great conversation, man. I finally got you on the show.
Hey, man. I'm glad to be on this bad boy, man. I'm glad I came, man. And, you know,
this is RFL right here.
Hey, tell him, man, this is who we are, man.
Yeah.
And send your music to us so we can check it out.
That's right. But you won't get on our label because we don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, we ain't not yet.
We got money. We're doing all right, but we don't have the kind of money like we don't have Jay-Z money. We'll just keep bringing Jay-Z back into this. If you need to get your stuff released by somebody, send it to Jay-Z. We'll listen to it. Yeah, you know, we'll listen to it. But
you need to get it put out
by somebody. If you need it put out and marketed, and you need the full court press. Send it to somebody else. We're busy dealing with our own stuff. So.
Yes, send it to Jigger.
There you go. All right, man. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show, dude. Skidmatic in the house.
Thanks for having me, man.
Everybody out there, if you like the content we have here, remember you can find us on YouTube or you can find us on your favorite podcast delivery service. Would love it if you subscribed. If you know anybody that would enjoy this content or needs to hear this content, would love it if you'd share it. And you can hit us up. Email is in the show notes. Let us know what you think. Also, you can hit up Jeff or I at our sites or on our socials. Again, those links in the show notes below, unless you're watching this somehow weird and it's above, but I've never seen that. So it's probably below. And with that, Jeff, man, you have a great day, dude.
You do the same, brother. Thank you.